Well, first with us, the head of the government's COVID-19 public health advisory group, who says the Delta outbreak will ultimately speed up New Zealand's reopening to the world. Epidemiologist Professor Sir David Skeggs' group has submitted several reports to the government earlier this month and has given advice on the COVID protection framework or traffic light system that the government outlined on Friday. So David says the new system is a major milestone in the pandemic, and he believes New Zealand will swiftly become a high vaccination nation, which alongside careful public health measures will enable us to return to some sort of normal. What would that look like, and when will we reach it? David, kia ora, and welcome back to 9 to Noon.
Thank you, Catherine. Good morning.
Could you explain first what the nature of your group's involvement was in the traffic light system that the government announced? It's been the subject of some debate and contention.
Yes, it has. Well, our group was asked to give advice on what the strategy should be for New Zealand after completion of the vaccination program. And we recommended a strategy, we called it COVID minimisation and protection. And I was delighted to hear the Prime Minister announced on Friday that they are adopting that approach. As far as the new protection framework goes, I mean, of course, that word protection is now reflected in this new system. We were not involved in developing that. That was developed by the government. But we have, over the last month or so, given feedback on successive drafts of that framework, and we gave quite robust feedback earlier on, but I must say I feel that we've ended up with a very good system.
It's a major milestone in New Zealand's response to COVID, you believe, and the timing is right. Could you explain both?
Well, yes, because some people are very upset that we're moving away from the old alert system, but of course that was developed in a great rush at about March of last year, and that had to change with the advent of vaccination. You know, we're now approaching a time when 90% or more, we hope, of New Zealanders will be vaccinated. That has to make a difference. And the new system reflects vaccination at every level. So I think it is really a step forward, which had to come once we had used the vaccine that's now available.
For those who say, though, you could have done this using the existing level system, and also, well, I'll come to the second point. Answer that first. Why couldn't we have just called it level 1, level 2, level 2.5?
Oh, well, you could have used numbers. I mean, that's the government's chosen to use a colour system, a traffic light system, but I don't think that's really important. What's important is that you do have levels, and that at each level you take account of whether people are vaccinated or not, because that's going to make a huge difference to our future.
These words, elimination and suppression, this again has been quite polarising. People who were very disappointed at what they felt was the giving up on elimination and a move to suppression. Could you explain your view on the words we are using and why, again, it might be a different time now?
Well, yeah, I've spent too much of my life, Catherine, over the last 18 months arguing with people about what elimination means and what suppression means and what mitigation means. And unfortunately, these terms are used in such different senses that I think they've passed their usefulness. I mean, people keep on equating elimination with eradication, with zero COVID, which it's not. So that's why our group recommended that we stop arguing about the terms and adopt a strategy of COVID minimisation and protection. We want to protect people from getting COVID and also from the effects of other people getting COVID. Because, of course, if everyone else around you is getting COVID, you're not going to be able to get good health care. But the interesting thing is, you know, I think most people would say that in Auckland, we've moved to a suppression approach because it's quite clear that that outbreak is not going to be stamped out. It can't be done. In the rest of the country, people would say we're still following the elimination strategy. But actually, we're using exactly the same methods in Auckland as in the rest of the country. In fact, in Auckland, we're using more rigorous methods because we've got a lockdown, a level 3 lockdown. But all the same approaches of testing, contact tracing, social and public health measures are the same. So I really don't think it's a good idea to keep arguing, and of course it becomes a sort of political football, about these epidemiological terms. I think we all know what we need to do, and what we need to do is get on and do it.
The goal has been from the beginning to manage any outbreak here in a way that prevents the overrunning of the hospitals, and particularly ICU, and to your point, prevents also essential surgeries like heart attacks and strokes, let alone hip replacements, from being able to happen. How far are we from the point, and how will we know when we are at a point that our hospital system can cope with whatever's to come?
Well, I think we know we're not far from it at any time, because unfortunately our health system, and by the way, it's not just, everyone focuses on the hospitals and particularly on ICUs, but intensive care units, but it's actually primary care as well. You know, we haven't got a large capacity there. And we all know that when people get sick and need treatment, think of all the people on waiting lists in this country. There's very little, there's no slack in the system. So if we get a really large outbreak, we're going to be in big trouble. And I mean, I find it quite sobering that with what has only been a moderate-sized outbreak in Auckland, I mean, it's a small outbreak compared with most of the world, and yet it's our largest hospital centre, and they had to fly in people from elsewhere around the country. Nurses and so on. Well, how are we going to cope when we've got outbreaks occurring in different parts of the country, say in Invercargill or Palmerston North? So, yeah, we do have to do everything we can, I believe, to minimise the spread of COVID-19 in New Zealand.
You also are of the view that we're behind where we should be on other essential parts of this plan, our contact tracing abilities. Goodness, Aisha Vera wasn't even in Parliament when she was advising the government. You should be able to ramp up to coping with 1,000 cases a day plus their contacts. Our use of rapid antigen testing. Business has been pushing and pleading and finally got the permission to begin to innovate on that front. What has stopped these things happening more quickly?
Oh, I really don't know, Catherine. It is really disappointing that we have been so slow to take up additional testing methods like saliva testing and rapid antigen testing. And I wish we had expanded the contact tracing workforce more than we have. It has been expanded, and actually, compared with most of the world, it's extremely good, but it needs to be better. Because, you know, that is going to be one of the keys to keeping this thing under control.
All right. Now let's look at where things go from here then as the vaccine numbers get up. First of all, let's talk about the 90% vaccine target. And this is across populations, not just a national figure. Is it realistic that we can attain it? And can we attain it in the time people want it to happen, which is preferably for some semblance of a normal Christmas for most of us?
Yes, I think we can. I think the government proposal is a sensible one. I hope people will see 90%, as Ashley Bloomfield says, as a milestone rather than a final target, because we do need to get higher than that eventually. But I think, you know, this is a sensible milestone, and looking at what's happening in different DHBs around the country, I'm sure it can be achieved. Of course, at the end of the day, it all depends on New Zealanders getting round to getting vaccinated. But things are looking very promising.
The Deputy Prime Minister this morning appeared to firm up the timeline for Auckland as being the end of November. Now, this is based on the third DHB, Counties Manukau, reaching the 90% mark by the end of this week, meaning second doses across Counties Manukau and the region's two other DHBs should be there by the end of November for both doses. Of course, that's if everyone goes back for a second dose. And this is what happens, Sir David, and I think this is what frustrates people. This sort of feels like the goalposts keep moving. From your view, what is it that we need to be at before we can begin to ease those restrictions, particularly in Auckland, and looking at using much more of this plan to open up?
Well, I think Auckland should be at 90% before the end of November. As you say, the DHBs are very close to it now. I think one or two of them are already over 90% for first dose. And I would have thought there's a big incentive on people to go and get that second dose after about 3 weeks. So, and I'm sure there'll be tremendous encouragement for people to do that. So I would be very surprised if it's not achieved in Auckland.
All right. The reliance on vaccination certificates, how powerful will this be? And are you confident in a system that will be efficient? In other words, people will be able to use it, businesses will be able to use it.
Well, they're certainly used in other countries, and I think it will be a really important system. A lot of people see it as a way of sort of cajoling people into getting vaccinated. I think it's a lot more than that, because it's a way of protecting even those of us who have been vaccinated from mass spread of the virus. Because if you look at other countries, there are countries that have got very high immunization rates and often have had natural immunity because of had so much disease over the last 18 months, and yet they've still got hospitals full of patients. I mean, I always look at Scotland, Catherine, which is, you know, the same population as ours. They've had very high vaccination rates, they've got high natural immunity, and yet they've still got, right now, 900 people in hospital with COVID-19, about 60 in intensive care units. And they're having about 150 deaths every week. So just having people vaccinated is not enough. You've got to stop mass spread of the virus. And these vaccine certificates will make sure that the kind of events and occasions where the virus is most likely to be spread will be mainly attended by people who've taken the trouble to have the vaccine.
Are other measures inevitable if we're not to go the same route as some of those other countries that have opened up, have got really good vax rates? Ireland's another, Singapore's yep. another, and yet find cases rising to worrying levels again when it comes to ability to manage. What else is going to have to stay in the toolkit?
Well, it's those public health and social measures. And yes, you mentioned two really good examples. Ireland, which, again, has a really good vaccination coverage, higher than ours, and has a lot of natural immunity, because, of course, Ireland's had thousands of deaths as well. That just gives you an index of the amount of disease they've had. And yet, in Ireland, there's lots of people in hospital with COVID-19, including in intensive care. Similarly, Singapore sort of announced 2 or 3 months ago, well, we're going to live with the virus now and treat it just like the flu. But, you know, they've now got just extended, I think, over the weekend, quite rigorous restrictions for another 4 weeks because they're worried about the upswing. So vaccination alone is not enough. And I think it's a really important thing we all have to accept. We also need public health and social measures, things like mask wearing, making sure that we don't go out when we've got what seems like a cold, getting tested when we have any symptoms, and then the all-important rapid contact tracing and isolation of contacts. These are the sort of things that could make New Zealand, I think, world-leading in dealing with this virus, but it will take a concerted effort.
Couple of points. The South Island, I've been listening to the courteous agitation growing in some of its leaders down there about the fact it doesn't even get a mention, it seems, at many of the recent media conferences. It's had its first case in well over a year, and that case came from the North Island and is isolating now. Are we going to end up in a situation where we might have times where Auckland's at red, the rest of the North Island's at orange, and the South Island's at green? Or how's this thing going to operate over time?
Well, that remains to be seen. But I must say, Catherine, as someone who... I'm an Aucklander originally, but I've been living in the South Island most of my life. I get very exasperated hearing people in the South Island saying, oh, why have we got alert level 2? The South Island is going to have COVID-19. There's no question about that. It's surprising it hasn't spread more widely yet. But it will turn up here because we all know we're going to start opening the borders in the first quarter of next year. So even if COVID-19 didn't spread from Auckland to the South Island, which, you know, I think it's highly likely that it will do, if it hasn't already. I mean, we know about the person in Blenheim, but I'm in Queenstown right now, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's someone with COVID-19 here. But we know that next year, when we open the borders, as we must do, we can't be cut off forever, this virus is going to turn up all over New Zealand. So it's not going to be a question of the South Island as pure. We're all going to have to face it.
Can we talk about NYQ and what happens from here? For a start, we're now going to see more cases. We know that's going to put pressure on the NYQ places already limited for people overseas, as more and more people perhaps need to isolate with COVID. We've got a home isolation system, but that's not going to work for everyone. What do you believe is the path forward for MIQ? And then we'll talk about New Zealand citizens still trying to get home. But what's going to be the forward path for isolating at home or for having people needing to be in MIQ because home doesn't work for them?
Well, yes, you're right. We will need MIQ for some people, maybe many people. But if people can isolate safely at home, obviously that's much more efficient. It's better for them as well. But it needs to be done in a way that they're not going to infect the other people in their household and especially in the surrounding community. So it's important to have services available to provide food and so on for those people. And one of the things that our committee is recommending is that a lot of consultation is needed with the communities that are most affected to make sure that the arrangements for home isolation really will work. So, you know, in the future, I think most people who get COVID-19 will isolate at home. I mean, the thing is, unfortunately, the Auckland outbreak is going to increase, as we all know, in the days ahead. So we're going to be dealing with much larger numbers, and it just will not be possible to have them all spending 14 days or however many days in MIQ.
What of those citizens trying to come home? They are, well, they're in all sorts of states of emotion, to be quite blunt, just reading and hearing from them. They can't understand now why double vax citizens wanting to return can't isolate at home, or even people here with COVID can. And when you look at the recent statistics of where cases have come from, you can see their argument. What are the issues around just saying, okay, come home, you're double vaxxed, isolate at home, report in? Are we at that point yet or not?
Well, I don't know what the government's current plan is about that. I know there's a lot of work going on looking at the options. Of course, that's quite a good argument for people who are going to come to Auckland and stay in Auckland. But a lot of the people who come back to New Zealand are wanting to go to other parts of the country, where at the moment there is no COVID-19 or very little. The last thing we need at the moment is to seed COVID-19 all over New Zealand. And even with the most rigorous precautions, and our committee has, as you know, advised on this back in June, July, which led to the August announcement by the government, you know, we recommended that people should be fully vaccinated. They should have a PCR test before they left New Zealand, another test on arrival, and then possibly another test a few days later. But even with those precautions, every week there will be more people coming in who bring COVID in. Unfortunately, although the vaccine is so effective, it does not stop you from catching the virus, carrying the virus, and passing it on to other people. You're much less likely to do that than someone who's unvaccinated, but when you're talking about thousands of travellers coming in, it will keep happening. So if it was just Auckland, it would be a much simpler issue. But given we haven't got a totally safe boundary around Auckland, and given that a lot of those travellers will want to go beyond Auckland, I think the government's going to have quite a difficult policy decision to make as to how to operate this.
Well, you could let those wanting to come in Auckland and whose home base is Auckland isolate at home, and that would free up more spaces for others who want to come and MIQ it.
Absolutely true. And I think that's the sort of thing I imagine the government is thinking about, but I'm not involved in that. You'll have to ask ministers about that.
Where does this leave us ultimately then in opening up next year? Next year is now just 2 months away. The vaccination rates are getting to the kind of zone that we envisaged we might be at when there came to quote-unquote an opening up. I know you want them much higher, you want them 100%, then we'd be getting somewhere. But where does all of what we've been discussing leave us with any kind of quote-unquote opening up to the world?
Well, I don't think this will delay that. As you know, the government really has committed to a phased reopening in the first quarter of next year. And I expect that will still continue. And in fact, I mean, none of us wanted to have this outbreak. And, you know, I just feel sad for the people who've become so sick as part of it, and also for all the poor people in Auckland who've been locked down now for such a long period. But the one good thing about this outbreak is that most people are now vaccinated, which puts us in a stronger position for next year. If we hadn't had an outbreak, I have a horrible feeling that just with our national complacency, we would still have a very low vaccination coverage.
So has that plan changed much from August? Delta was already starting its path here as you were speaking in August at that event.
Yes.
Has the plan changed substantially or at all, in fact?
Well, to my knowledge, it has not changed substantially. The one thing, of course, is dealing with this outbreak in Auckland has been a big distraction for everyone who's working in this area. But as far as I understand, the government is still intent on carrying out that plan.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you again for your time. Professor Sir David Skegg, epidemiologist and advisor to the government's COVID-19 Public Health Advisory Group. He's the head of it, in fact.